Secret Love Foundations. Foundations. Once upon a time, it came out a paper by Chris Fuchs, Quant PH. I think it's remain a Quant PH, right? Anyway, it's a popular Quant PH. It got many quotations.
Physical theory, sure, like you know.
Burdening the taxpayer with conferences devoted to the quantum foundation.
Yeah. The title was very stimulating. Quantum mechanics as quantum information. It was very intriguing to me. Actually, 1 year before, I think, I listened
to a talk of Chris. It was in Maryland, Yanwashi conference, and I remember Chris was. I didn't understand a single thing of that talk. He was talking with the same transparency in front, with a big sigh on the transparency for half an hour. And I thought for a while, you know, he's getting crazy, something.
He's not sure of it, and he's kind of
The So it was something motivating QVM instead of
observables as a more foundational notion. And then 1 year after this paper in Växjö, the first time, no, it was not, Eindhoven. I finally understood everything. And I say, I know what we want to do. We want to get rid of Hilbert spaces. Don't misunderstand me. When I say get rid of Hilbert spaces, not because I don't like Hilbert spaces. I love Hilbert spaces. They are beautiful. But they have no physical meaning. And the point is that why are we obliged to use them? There should be a way to write down all probabilities without using them. Indeed, it seems that Chris is doing that yesterday. We had an example for how to get rid of Hilbert spaces. And I think there will be a follow-up. I got an idea about this. I'm not so sure that this thick PVM is the real issue. Anyway. But let me stress one thing here. There is this small sentence, and only a little more. This is a crucial point. This is going to be the leitmotif of all my talk. In all attempts of deriving quantum mechanics from some operational principle, in all attempts that I know, there is always a little more, including the one that I'm going to show today. So this paper was saying something which I found very intriguing. Quantum mechanics is not like relativity. Once there were the Lorentz transformation, then Einstein came. He found the principle of relativity and derived the principle of relativity, the constancy of speed of light, and derived the Lorentz transformation. We don't have a principle of quantumness from which we can derive quantum mechanics. And here we have, in this transparency of Chris, this is another very popular transparency. I asked him to give me this transparency because I want to use it, and finally I'm using it. This represents, I think, the old spirit of what I call operationalism. So here we are on a different planet of those people who wants to have quantum mechanics as you know, observer independent, like some cosmologist or GRW, Girardi, Weber, Riemann. Here we want the observer. The observer is the one who takes the decision of making a test, performing a test. This would be the choice of the PVM. Make a test on a system, and then there will be the reaction, which is the outcome of this test. And And another paper was very stimulating for me. This is also well known by Lucy and Hardy. who derived quantum mechanics from five reasonable actions. This word reasonable is like the same little more, is the little more of Chris Fuchs. Indeed, what does it mean reasonable? There are a couple of axioms which are not, I think, operational. They are actually mathematical. Which?
By reasonable, I think Hardy meant more British. Because the British are very reasonable people.
Yeah, okay. So reasonable means practical also, in the British style, very concrete. And here we have the representation of the operationalism in a figure of a Lucy and Hardy paper. So there is a preparation, the system, the transformation, a test, you can change the test, and then there is classical information coming up.
This is essentially the point of view of Ludwig, if you. So welcome to this new world of operationalism. I love this word, I completely fall in love for it. And it is just made of these few simple things. We have tests. We can perform tests on a system. Let me say that the system operation is just a collection of possible tests you can perform. And what are states? States will be the compendium of the probability for this test. Each test is what? It's just a collection of possible outcomes, and which will occur generally with some probability. So that's all. The mathematics which comes out from this starting point is in finite dimension is easy, but I promised to Chris not to be technical. So I will not give derivation, I will just give some flavor and just results. The problem?
On the test apparatus or not?
Okay, so this is a machine for one test. Then there is another machine for another test, or there can be a knob here that you change the kind of test. Depends. Now, operation. I have a double motivation. First, I want to understand things
as much as I can without using quantum mechanics, without the detour of the mathematics of quantum mechanics. If I can understand things directly, I would be much happier. And second, I'd like to derive quantum mechanics as a mathematical representation of an operational framework. Let me say that theoretical physics should be a mathematical representation of reality. What does it mean, mathematical representation? What does it mean, representation? Representation means that you have a standard that you know very well, like a mathematical object, like a group. And then you have the structure, the practical structure that you want to map to this structure. So the practical framework that you have in reality. And then there is a morphism between the operational structure and the mathematical structure. This is not true for quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is not a representation of reality in this sense, because you don't have a correspondence between your mathematical object don't come from an operational object. They are not a representation of operational things. I'd like to review very shortly all the main attempts in this direction. The first outstanding attempt was maybe not motivated by axiomatization, but by interpretation, by Birkhoff von Neumann. They tried to see quantum mechanics as a new kind of propositional calculus. This spawned the whole research line of quantum logic. Mackey is considered the father of quantum logic. And if you take his book, which is a very interesting book, by the way, you find a set of axioms. And there is one axiom, which is the little more, he says explicitly, this axiom is a doc. I associate to every proposition a Hilbert subspace. And so this way you construct a lattice of projectors, which is the orthomodular lattice. This is a mathematical axiom. And then this line, you know, was followed by Yauch-Piron. The problem is that in this kind of study, there was focus only on single system and very little, actually nothing, on multipartite system. This, I think, is probably the failure of Piron's work. And what we learned from quantum information is that we need to focus more on multipartite system. Entanglement is the real quantum future. Von Neumann again, collaborating with Jordan and Wigner, follow also the line of giving an algebraic formulation in terms of a composition, a product of observables, the Jordan product. What was the strong point of this? That this can be defined easily in terms of the square of the observable and of the sum. Square and functions are very easy to define. You just take the square of the outcome or the function of the outcome. But how you define the sum? I think there is no practical way of defining the sum. You have two machines, one measure A, one measure B. How can you define the sum? Some people say, you know, you just take the sum of the expectation, and you say this corresponds to the observable, which gives the same expectation. But there are infinitely many observables giving the same expectation and having much worse higher moment, for example, right? So you have to define the sum of two observables in terms of outcome, but then you need to measure them contextually in the same system. So you are assuming that they are compatible. So I think there is no way out in defining without the assumption of compatibility, the sum of two observables. But, okay, there are other problems with this product. Another product is you can see yourself in a minute that this is not associative in general and is not distributive. This is very easy to check. Just try. It's not distributive. It's a very strange product. It's symmetric. But the problem of the definition in terms of the sum was in some way solved by Afs and Schultz, because they were able to get this Jordan product by just the structure of the convex sets of states, by the geometry of the convex set of states, making some hypothesis on orientability of the convex sets of states and on the shape of the face of the convex set of states, which are made of balls, which are just the qubits. So again, the little more is always there. There is always a mathematical assumption. and then we have the outstanding, famous algebraic formulation of Siegel, who was trying to get the Jordan product from scratch in a purely operational way. I should confess that I know very little about this. I have his work, but I've never studied seriously. But it seems to me that still he is relying on the definition of sum of observable, which is, in my opinion, with the idea of getting the Jordan product, it was actually getting something more general than quantum mechanics. And the problem is that it is easier to get something more general than quantum mechanics. What is difficult is to get quantum quantum mechanics. And anyway. Non-distributive with respect to the sum. Try.
Approach.
No. Siegel. No. Siegel originally was getting was writing down. I have the paper with me. We can check it. Writing down an operational framework in which there is not the assumption. There is no need of a distributivity.
Very similar to Jordan algebra.
Yeah, very similar to Jordan abstract Jordan algebra. So. And then there is the usual C-star and all these things, but this is another issue. The axiomatic approach was on the Jordan algebra. And then you know, certainly, the C-star algebraic formulation of quantum mechanics, which
many people think is more operational than the Hilbert space, but that's actually not true. It's representation independent, because you got rid of the Hilbert space, but you have observables, and you have multiplication and sum of observables, and there is not a consistent definition of multiplication and sum. One way of getting the C-star algebra is to start from the Jordan product using Alfsen and Schultz, so without using the sum, and then to try to embed the Jordan product in an associative algebra, right? In this way, so the Jordan product, if you have an associative algebra, then the Jordan product is just AB plus BA. But in order to have this embedding, you have to do some mathematical assumption, which have no practical meaning. So again, the quantum, the little more. And then we have the last work motivated by informational theoretical reason, like the one of Chris that I mentioned, Lucien Hardy. And there is a work which is pretty well known by Clifton, Bube, and Alberson, which I want to strongly criticize, because it seems that they are deriving quantum mechanics from the no broadcasting and no signaling and no bit commitment. But actually, they are assuming the C-star algebra from the scratch, and then they are discriminating between quantum and classical mechanics. In my opinion, the real problem is to derive just the C-star algebraic formulation, which includes both classical and quantum. It is what maybe we should call the classical quantum hybrid, which corresponds to direct sum of operator algebras like big of H. You have at the same time classical and quantum mechanics. The classical mechanics is in the direct sum, and it corresponds to a quantum system with super selection rules of conservation law. We want to discriminate between this class of probabilistic theories and a much larger class, which includes the PR boxes, the Popescu-Rorick boxes, which are no signaling. They have correlations which are stronger than quantum mechanics. And this is actually was an important step forward, because there was a full line of research of Nicolas Gizem, who was trying to get quantum mechanics as the last possible no signaling theory, such that the correlation are non-local, but the strength of the correlation is the maximum that you can have in order to not violate no signaling. And that's not true, because Popescu and Roig found that there are actually statistical probabilistic theories that violates the Tiresson bound of quantum mechanics, and there are still no signaling. So this was a very important, I think, progress in this direction. Now, I want to discuss with you, and I am looking for your feedback, about this working hypothesis. Let's say that quantum mechanics, instead of being a limitation to our knowability of reality, it is actually a mathematical representation of a fair operational framework. What I mean by fair operational framework? Fair operational framework means that you have a set of rules which allow you to make a correct prediction on future events on the basis of tests that you are able to perform. So regard the things in terms of a fair game between the poor observer and Mother Nature. So Mother Nature is not malicious. It doesn't want to put you in trouble. There is not a little devil who can scramble your experiment coming back from the future, or scrambling the experiment from very, very far apart from another star in another galaxy, right? So, please.
On the previous transparency, when you say correct, what is that?
Correct the probabilistically.
Okay, so you have to, so.
Some probability fidelity. It's a quantitative concept, correct? It's not illogical in this context.
Okay.
Clearly. I understand your point.
I mean, I'm a little worried because if it's only probabilistic, I mean, I can just write, I can make a probabilistic prediction.
No, but there are situations in which, you know in advance the probability is one.
But in quantum
you can select this situation.
There are always situations where the probability is not one or zero. And if the correct value of the probability is two-thirds,
it's
but
like
I say
it's
one-third.
Let me say it's the following. It's a game. You are playing a game with Mother Nature, and you are allowed to not to lose all the time.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a game critical situation.
Mother Nature is not cheating because it's quantum. Okay? This is what I am.
Another thing is that you must have the possibility of calibrating your test. So
you want to know what your test is really testing. And another thing is that you must have the possibility of making global observation from local tests. Otherwise, every time you have to build up a global machine. So if you want to have some information about the universe, the correlation between this and that point, you don't need to build up a machine which is as large as the universe. And then I am seeking. I'm asking you, maybe you have other ideas to give me, and I will be very happy to analyze them. So the axiomatic framework, let me distinguish between axioms that are just primordial concept that I give you for granted, like probability, event, tests, like the line, the point in geometry, and the true independent system, and the true postulates, which I say they are the requirements for fairness. So the idea is that all postulates should be requirement for fairness. We have the no signaling from future, from the future, the no signaling from very far system in the sense we will see this is equivalent to the existence of independent system, the existence of faithful states, which is the calibrability that I told you, and a little more is a mathematical postulate that I was not able to make it operational, and I hope I will be in the future. There is always a little more. Okay, let me say that the general approach is that every mathematical object must be defined operationally, but then the mathematical completion must not be operational. Like, for example, we are using all the time real numbers. They are not operational, but they are just for mathematical convenience. And so we will use algebraic closure, norm closure, linear span with the same motivation of simplicity. And in this talk, I will consider finite dimension. Please don't shoot your gun on me. It's finite dimension. And I will consider, this is only for simplicity, identical systems. So I will not have the possibility of transforming from one system to another different system. When I have a multipartite system, they are the same. Okay. So what are the states? They are just compendia of probabilities for all possible events in any possible test. They must be normalized over a test, over each test. And you must have, if you want a normalization in terms of every deterministic evolution, probability one, I will denote the set of states by this Cyrillic sigma, the German.
By this German sigma, and I will put this sigma.
Fraktur.
I know the latex name, but German. It's German, right? So this. And I would put this plus as an index to denote the cone, and then the all positive combination of the elements of the convex set. Now, consider a cascade of two tests in a row. The first, so you have two boxes like the one that I showed you before, and the system is getting out from one box and enters the other box. So test B following test A. This is a new test, which is made by a cascade of event E, followed by event B. And now, this was noticed by Ozawa the first time, and I was astonished. I felt very stupid. He told me that in Sendai, last time I visited him. So everybody thinks it's obvious that if you take the marginal over the second event of the probability of having the joint probability of having first A and then B, if you sum over all possible events of the second test, you must have the probability of the first event, right? This looks quite natural. But this is an assumption, because in general, this should depend on which test you are performing. The independence of this sum on the test B is an assumption, which we should call no signaling from the future. So this situation actually is asymmetric. It can be reversed. We can sum here, then it will be, if it is independent on this, it will be no signaling from the past. Eh? And indeed, it will be dependent on this one. So if you take the marginal over the first test, it will depend on which test you do. This is very important, because you can define, it's the definition of conditioning. Conditioning from the past, or conditioning from the future, if you reverse the arrow of time. Anyway, you must choose your the arrow of time. Then you define conditioning on knowledge, knowing that A occurred. Okay, so knowledge is defined with respect to the past, because you have the arrow of time from the past. So this is the no signaling from the future. And so it's just conditioning. So if you want, it's a very, very weak postulate. It's not even a postulate, it's something that everybody accepts. And this will allow you to define the conditional state as the probability rule, which gives the probability, the conditional probability. This will be the variable second event in the cascade. I will put a dot for a variable. So this will be the probability rule, in which you put here B. And then you see immediately that conditioning is an evolution of the state. So what is evolution? It can be identified with state conditioning. If you want, you can regard this linearly. The evolution applied to omega, which is linear, is what? Is the new joint probability coming, the joint probability with the first event A. And once you identify evolution and conditioning, then events are identified with transformations. So the logic is very strict. Now events become transformations, and the transformation makes they are a convex set. You can randomly choose between different tests, and so also between different transformation. And say this is, you can define convex set, convex combinational transformation, and you can compose them. So and there is the identity. So there are also a monoid. So it's a convex monoid. Now, this is a crucial point. There are two complementary characteristics of the transformations that are one purely dynamical and the other, I say, purely informational. So we say that two transformations are equivalent from the dynamical point of view if they produce the same conditional state for all possible states. So they give the same transformation. Whereas they are informational equivalent if they occur with the same probability for all possible states. But maybe they
they give a different state conditioning. And the two equivalence classes are completely sufficient to specify fully, completely, the transformation, because a transformation A is completely specified not by the probability rule only, but the probability rule with another transformation following for all possible B and for all possible states. So once you give this for all possible B and for all possible states, you give the two equivalence classes. Now, up to now, I have no postulate. That is, there's no signaling from the future to define conditioning. And I already can derive many consequences. I will give you some of them. First, say that the transformation makes no disturbance in the sense that it doesn't change the state. This means that the conditional state of the conditioned by the transformation is the same as the state for every possible for every possible state. It doesn't change. Now, you just put this into the conditional probability rule, and what you find is that the transformation T must belong to the center of the set of transformation. And if the center is trivial, then there must be the probability must be independent on the state. You can see immediately this. And so the conclusion is that if you have a trivial center, there is no information from the center, and so there will be no information without disturbance, which is what you have in quantum mechanics, and which is the detectability of the eavesdropper in cryptography. So it is the non-abelian character which gives the detectability of the eavesdropper, and indeed it is known by studies of Leifert, Matthew Leifert, by Jonathan Barrett, Alex Wills, and Barnroom, that the security of quantum cryptography is not actually a feature of quantum mechanics. It's true for all possible probabilistic theory, with the only exception of classical mechanics. And this is true also for the computing speed up. So it seems that it's classical mechanics that is bad. It's not quantum that is good. So now if we try to find, to get quantum mechanics from the feature that we want, we don't get quantum mechanics, we get more. So the idea of getting quantum mechanics from quantum information maybe doesn't work. We get more because all the good features are good for all mechanics with the exception of the classical one. And another theorem, which is actually pretty hard to prove in quantum mechanics, is the Wigner theorems, that the only transformation that are inverted by another transformation must send pure states to pure states and are isometries of the convex set of states. So they are the equivalent of unitary transformations. This is another thing you can prove yourself pretty easily. Now, I will call the equivalence class of all transformations that have the same probability for all possible states the informational equivalence class. I say informational equivalence because they give the same information. It's from the probability that you get information on the state on the probability table, okay? So we can say this is an informational equivalence. This is the effect of Ludwig. Oh, sorry.
So I'm sort of hanging on with my fingernails here. That you define transformations as being conditioning, right?
Yeah.
But then it seems like transformations are also going to include isometries, e.g. unitaries. So yeah.
This would be a deterministic conditioning. You know the transformation occurred for sure. You know the transformation occurred. It occurred with probability 1. It's conditioning anyway. So I know it looks odd, but it's you can have conditioning with probability
it's
1.
It's an unconditional conditioning.
Yeah. So the effect is the
equivalence class of all transformation occurring with the same probability, the information equivalence class. Let me show some little thing now. So this means that the probability rule, the Born rule, is given just by the effect, by the equivalence class, not by the transformation. And this will be true also for the conditional state. So I will put this underline B for the equivalence class. Now when I make this equal to this, I get this equal to this for all possible states. This means that the equivalence class of these, the information equivalent class of the cascade of transformation, is given by this. You can see now, oh sorry, that you have the Heisenberg evolution of effects under the action of the transformation. This is the Heisenberg picture. So it comes by notation. Clearly, effects are linear functional over states, because this is a number. They are bounded by one, right? So you can regard effects as dual of states. I will consider in the future, so I will denote effects by this German E and transformation by this German T, and we put a plus for the cone, and I will put an R or a C for the linear, real, and complex span. Now, what is an observable? It's just a collection of effects that sum to the deterministic effect.
And what is an information incomplete observable?
It's just an observable which span the linear span of effects. This is what Chris was using yesterday. Now we come to the point of summing the transformation and summing the effects. You cannot define the sum of observables, but you can define easily the sum of transformation and the sum of effects. You say that the two transformations are test compatible if for every state, the sum of the probability of the two transformations is bounded by one. This means that they can, in principle, occur in the same test. Now, I define the sum of the two transformations as the union of the event. You know, the transformation and the event are the same thing. We identified them at the beginning. Namely, you know that the apparatus signals that one of the two occurred, but it doesn't say which one. Okay, this is the union of the events, is the sum of the transformation. The probability rule must be given for all possible omega and for all possible effects, and is given by this simple rule. It's just the sum of the two probabilities, which corresponds to have an informational equivalence class, which is the sum of the two probability, and a dynamical equivalence class, which is the weighted sum of the conditional states. And this is maybe looks difficult, but if you regard in terms of joint probability instead of conditional probability, it's just linearity in the sense that the sum of the two transformation will give the sum of the transformed states. And you can check yourself that this, the composition of the transformation is distributive with respect to the sum. So everything now comes pretty easily. Okay, you can introduce norm in a natural way as a supremum of probabilities, and then you can extend to the linear span by taking the absolute value, and everything is defined operationally, and then you get, you can take the norm closure just for mathematical convenience, and you find what everybody knows, that state and effects are a dual Banach pair under the pairing, which is the Born rule. The generalized Bohr rule, and the transformation make a real Banach algebra. And you can check this is a Banach algebra and so on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is true also for the infinite dimension. Now I'm going to finite dimension.
So you didn't really need to say Banach.
Now, up to now, I didn't need, up to now, there was no need of Banach. But now, here, I'm saying that the transformation are matrices over effects. They are linear over effects. And I can regard them as matrices. And matrices implicitly means finite dimension, because I think as a C-star algebra, this means that I consider the effects as an Hilbert space. It's like to consider only Hilbert-Schmidt operators, right? So this is true for finite dimension. Otherwise, it is not the right way of doing this. But it's easy for now to understand things in finite dimension. And actually, it would be, I would love to understand everything in five dimensions and then to go to infinite dimensions.
No, as you. So, so let me just review very shortly what we have seen, starting from the test as a set of probabilistic events. We have the notion of state, which is just the table of possible probabilities for all possible events of all possible tests, the evolution as a state conditioning, and events are identified with transformations. We have the notion of effects, the notion of observable coming from that. On this, we can define naturally norms. So we have state and effects are a dual real Banach pair. The only assumption here is the no signaling from the future. We can make addition of transformation. And we have a transformation as a real Banach algebra. And we have the transformation are a C-star algebra over effects, are matrices over effects. Everything, the only postulate is no signaling from the future. Now we go to the notion of independent systems, which for me is just equivalent to the notion of possibility of performing local tests. What are local tests? Are tests that are commuting. So if I perform a test here and then a test there, I get the same if I do the reverse. A1 composed with B after is the same as if I do it before. So for this reason, I just write local test as a string. This is the local test on one, on two, on the third system, without specifying which one is first. And then clearly, for the effect corresponding to many local transformations, is just a sequence of effects again. Now we have the notion of local marginal state, which corresponds to the partial trace in quantum mechanics. What is this? So I have the joint probability rule for all possible systems. There are many systems here. I take the probability rule in which I make a transformation only on the nth system, and then all other systems are left untouched. I make the identity. This is the local state at the nth system. So a very primordial notion. Since these are local transformations, they correspond to local effects. So actually, this is the same as putting the effect here. So here I have the deterministic effect in place of the identity. But this also means that I have no signaling. Because what does it mean, a deterministic effect? It means any complete observable which is executed here or here or here will give the same deterministic effect. And so there will be no signaling from another system. And by the way, if you consider that each one of these can be regarded as a marginal of summing over all possible effects of an observable, this sum is equivalent to a mixture of state. And you get immediately the existence of equivalent incompatible mixtures, like the one of the BB84 states. So also this notion has nothing to do with any postulate. It's very general. Now we come to the real first postulate, which is the existence of a faithful state. What is a dynamically faithful state? Is a state which is a bipartite state, so I have a system and an ancilla, such that the evolution of the state under the transformation is in one-to-one correspondence with the transformation. This is what happens, for example, with a maximally entangled state. But this is what happens also if you have a complete set of input state to make tomography, for example, of a channel. So you need not just an complete orthogonal basis, you also need all possible linear combination. The problem is that if you don't have such a state, you cannot do the calibration of your transformation. Because if you have a sufficiently complete set of state, this is equivalent to a mixture of state. So So I'm not saying this state must be pure. It is pure in the quantum case. It exists a pure state of this case in the quantum case. But if you don't have such a state, which is dynamically fateful, then you cannot never know what's going on in your test. So this is something that you must have. And a second requirement is that the state is preparationally fateful, means that every output joint state can be obtained by making a suitable transformation on just one of the two systems. So you are making something local, easy to do, and you can get every possible output state starting from one state. So you must be able just to produce one state, and then by making tests, you produce all possible states. Now, the assumption that there is a fateful state, this postulate, has many consequences. First one is that there is the so-called weak sect duality, namely the cone of the states and the cone of effects are isomorphic. They are not the same. Self-duality is that when they are the same. This is weak self-duality. Quantum mechanics is self-dual. So here means that we are really getting close to quantum mechanics. We are at hailing distance from quantum mechanics, as Alex Wills likes to say. And then you can prove that bipartite system can be represented by tensor product. Okay, this is inclusion, so maybe the bipartite system is inside this tensor product. And then another consequence is a theorem very simple to prove, is that you have the local observability principle that I told you. So everything comes out from this fateful state. That if you want to perform a joint, you want to know the correlation between three systems, you want to get information on the joint state of three systems, you don't need to build up a machine, a non-local machine, but you just can use local tests. This is a crucial point because it's what I like to say, is a way of to reconcile the holism with the reductionism. Even though reality is non-local, you can check it locally. So everything comes out from the fateful state. Now, up to now, we have seen that a mathematical representation of a fair operational framework is a sister algebra representation of transformations in finite dimension, gives a tensor product representation for multipartite system, weak self-duality, and specifically, the sister algebra for transformation is equivalent to the probabilistic framework plus no signaling from the future. And the linearity is the evolution as conditioning. And the fateful state give the tensor product rule, weak self-duality, and the local observability. Now, the problem is we have the sister algebra representation of the transformation. But the problem is when such representation is quantum. Actually, when is the quantum classical hybrid? And the answer is that when effects make a sister algebra. And this is odd, because effects are a linear space. And this makes no sense to compose effects. The notion of effect abhors composition. So we are in trouble because we need to find what does it mean to compose two effects that are probabilistic equivalence classes, nothing to do with composition. And here, the idea, I need this little more that I told you. I'm using the little more is a mathematical postulate. For the moment, is the Choi-Chomolkovsky isomorphism. I say that the cone of transformation, this is the isomorphism, is isomorphic to the positive bilinear forms over effects, complex span of effects, or if you want, to the positive matrices over effects. This is the Choi-Chomolkovsky isomorphism. Is, yeah, I'm saying the problem is that in quantum mechanics, The Choi-Jamolkowski isomorphism in this mathematical definition and the fateful state are the same thing. Here they are different in this general context. Yeah, it's a little, no, it's not a little bit. It's exactly the Choi-Jamolkowski, the mathematical part of the Choi-Jamolkowski. So why this comes to help us? Because now we can say if the two cones are isomorphic, then the extremal are in one-to-one correspondence with the extremal rays. But what are the extremal rays of the positive matrices over effects? They are just rank one projectors. So they are, in apart from a phase, in one-to-one correspondence with effects, right? Now, here something strange comes. Quantum mechanics is really strange. I need another postulate. I thought this was obvious. If I compose two transformations that are atomic, elementary, so I say that I can sum transformation. There are transformations that I cannot get as sum of other transformations. How do you want to call them? Atomic, elementary? In the composable looks bad because the composition is the prod, is another thing. Is in, they cannot be written as sums. So let me say atomic or elementary. If I compose two elementary transformation, I get another elementary transformation. Is it true? If you think about it, you may have another experiment in which you get the same transformation of the composition, and maybe in that experiment, why not? It can be decomposed as the sum of two transformations. In principle, we don't know. But this is something which looks very, very right. But it's still an assumption, atomicity of evolution. Now this means that if you compose two, I was saying the ray, in this case, the rays are rank one projectors, in this case are the atomic transformations, and they are in one-to-one correspondence. If I compose rays here, I get rays because of this postulate. Okay, now I don't want you to show all the tails, but if you ask me, so there is a phase here coming out, because the projector, the rank one projector, is bilinear, right? So there is a phase, but actually this phase must satisfy the associativity rules if you want to make a composition. And this is going to be a so-called two cocycle. But you can show that this two cocycle actually is trivial. And you can show that there is always an isomorphism in which the elementary atomic transformation can be written in the Krauss form with only one element. And now it's very easy because I use the powerful polar identity, because everything is complex. And I can write explicitly the product of two effects in terms of the product of two elements of the complex span of transformations. So if you give me probabilities and you say the Choi-Jamolkowski is true, I have a way of writing down explicitly the operator form of effects and the composition of them and everything. Because I start from transformations, transformations are defined probabilistically, then I take linear combination, everything is defined. I can build up, make a reverse quantum engineering of the probabilities. So conclusion, we have seen that no signaling from the future implies that events are identified with transformation, evolution with conditioning. In the general probabilistic framework, we have a C-star algebraic representation of transformation over the linear space of effects. This is in finite dimension. We have other nicely, but there are many other actually, no disturbance and no information without disturbance for non-abelian, the non-abelian case. the Wigner theorem and other nicety. And then independent system is no signaling. And also the equivalent mixtures come here. The postulate, postulating the existence of a faithful state give the weak self-duality, the tensor product, local observability principle. And then we need this little more, including this atomicity of composition of transformations, of evolution. And this little more gives a kind of identification of effects as elementary, as atomic transformations, and also a way of getting the C-star algebra of effects, which is what you have in the quantum classical hybrid. And so we have now the big open problem of motivating operation in this little more, the Choi-Zamolkowski isomorphism. It's just one thing we need to understand. This, to me, is a huge improvement. And second thing, please, you can help me if you give me your idea of what should be other possible fair rules. I'm really seeking new fair rules. How should be, which are the rules of a fair game between the observer and reality? Thank you very much.
How does classical physics come out or include it here?
Okay, so now we have classical and quantum together. And I think I can discriminate between quantum and classical. This I have not proved yet, but I believe is true, by saying that there exists a pure faithful state. This comes from the representation theory of C-star algebra. It's something that it's easy to. So these are the C-star algebra transformation, not of effects. So it's, but I think I can prove it. So there is no need of going to Nobel commitment or all these kinds of things, not even to Abelianity. It's just sufficient to say one pure state to calibrate everything, I get quantum mechanics. This, I believe, is the way of discriminating between the quantum and the classical case without resorting to non-Abelian. But I have both classical and quantum. And if you want to know what is the quantum case, it's easy. If you want to know what is the classical case, it's the other one, right? I don't know. This was your question?
Yes. Can you get a sense of what you mean by fair rules? So, to challenge you.
So, we are playing the game.
In your own development here, give me one example of what is a fair rule and tell me why it's a fair rule.
There's no signaling from the future.
No signaling from the future would be a fair rule.
Suppose you are God. You can build up everything, every machine you want. You give me the machine, and then we play the game. You say, tomorrow, you must be able to predict the outcome of another machine I will give to you. And you are not cheating. I should be able to go with zero balance at the end. I'm not losing all the time. I'm not winning all the time, but I'm not losing all the time. Suppose you are God and you are not cheating. This is fair. So it's a kind of epistemological principle.
What would be unfair? And it's like the Popescu Rorik box, what's unfair about that?
No. That's true.
That's fair.
I think up to now it's perfectly fair. In fact, I'm seeking for another principle, because up to now, Popescu Rorik are perfectly fair. Because they have a faithful state, they have everything.
Would John Smolin's John's world with the anti-inductivists, so a world where every time you see a coin toss land head, you become more convinced that it should be tails the next time. If the world works like that, so that we start flipping coins, and we see a lot of heads, and then
I assume that you are a very good probability.
Is that a statement about a fair rule, or is that,
I assume that we are using probability in the correct way. You are a gambler, you are playing with me, you are a scientist, you know probabilities. Whichever is your interpretation of probabilities, you are using probabilities in the right way.
So if you have one of these anti-inductivist priors, that's fine.
What is that?
Well, maybe I'm mischaracterizing what you're saying. There exists a prior such that when you flip these coins, you get more and more convinced that, in fact, tails is more likely, even though you've seen a string of heads. So that's perfectly fine if you're just applying data.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You are going to lose that time. There is a probability of losing the game. It's a probabilistic game. But in average, you should balance. I believe this. There must be some kind of epistemological principle. If Mother Nature is cheating against us, why we are here to do science?
Well, so another problem is, you say, please tell me your fair rules. Does that indicate that you don't feel that the system is really complete? Is it wanting in some way? Why do you want to know about other fair rules?
No, because, for example, this little more choice of Minkowski is very mathematical. And I'm looking for deriving it from
some physical sounding.
Yeah. I have other ideas, but they are mostly related to the complexity more than the fairness. I think that the complexity becomes, if it's growing exponentially, it becomes unfair. This may be, anyway, it's a very long story, some work in progress, which is at the very preliminary stage. I really don't have a, but maybe you can propose, you know, I show you many possibilities of fair rules. For example, unfortunately, the local observability principle comes from the faithful state, so they are the same. But maybe you
local observability would exclude real quantum mechanics, that is, with real numbers, not complex.
Yeah. This gives the right tensor product. Indeed, there is a paper. I don't remember the author. This famous mathematician who invented the wavelet. Now I don't remember her name, it's very famous.
Dobschies.
She wrote a paper in which she showed that the commutativity of the local tests gives, obviously this is pretty obvious, both the direct sum and the tensor product. But if you want to select the tensor product for independent system from the direct sum, you need the local observability principle, right? So you can derive the local observability principle, you can discriminate between tensor product and direct sum for independent system. But the faithful states plays the same. The faithful state plays the same game, the same gives the same result. It's extremely powerful, the faithful state. And this is certainly something that you need. If you don't have a faithful state, then you are lost. You make text, you don't know what you are doing. You need it.
Well, you were giving at the beginning some of these titles where, and just a little more. And I have another paper of Chris's that's like that, only that the subtitle was not even in the paper. It was the one he wrote with Asher Paris called Quantum Mechanics Needs No Interpretation. And whenever I show that paper, I always put underneath there, except ours.
That wasn't the subtitle, that was a subtext.
Yeah. Anyway, whenever you find some fair rule, please mail it to me.
Okay. Not last thing to speak in all the speakers for this afternoon.